first, let me ask you this. I mean, you are a complete team media player now, because even James and I would probably complain when they said, hey, and we're going to do it outside in Winnipeg all night long. were you really going, hey, great idea, guys? Did you enjoy being outside at that point?
Well, you guys are probably too old to remember being on teams, but I'm not. And when you're a first-year guy, like when I played the American League, you know, I only played 1 year of pro hockey. When I played the American League, I don't think I said a word till Christmas time. And you know how hard that is for me.
Yeah.
To keep quiet. And I was 22. I graduated university. I was older than most of the guys in the team, and I kept my mouth shut. When you're a rookie, you keep your mouth shut. So they make me tie my tie. I don't like it. I keep my mouth shut. You want me to sit outside? That's fine with me. You don't complain when you're a new guy.
You
sit in.
So year two will be very different for you after you got your rookie year done here. let me ask you. You mentioned this last night that you know Winnipeg just didn't play very heavy. They didn't hit the Leafs, and I wondered to myself, Brian, because the way teams are being built, do you think come playoff time, when it's always about the grit and the hard nose, that there's enough teams that maybe the game will move a little bit away from the hard-nosed playoff hockey, or will that ever happen?
Well, the biggest team in the league last year won the championship. No coincidence. Washington Capitals were the biggest team in the playoffs, and it was no coincidence. And I thought what tipped the series between Vegas and Winnipeg was when Winnipeg got away from their heavy game. I thought Buffalo was neutralized once Kyle Reeves came into the series. It kind of took away that edge that Buffalo's given them. And so, no, I think still there's a place for it. I hope there always is. You know, I think, you know, we've got to be careful we don't get to a game that's too cute and too fast and doesn't have hitting, because our fans still want to see that. But I know what you're saying. It becomes less important. But I think if you've got two teams of equal ability, the bigger team's going to win.
Yeah, but then if you look at the Olympics, you know, which is the showcase, I mean, it is physical, but can we not get more of a blend of that type of hockey come playoff time?
Do you think Olympic hockey's cool?
Oh, I don't have a problem with Olympic hockey when the pros are playing it. Like, not Olympics.
I think Olympic hockey is interesting when it's played on an NHL ice surface. I think otherwise it's only interesting because you've got the 20 best players in the world. The ice surface is terrible, a terrible size to produce entertaining hockey.
Yeah.
So I'm in favor of us going to a bigger – well, you toss it out there like that, and you guys are starting to get on my nerves.
Well, no, but what I'm saying Olympic hockey, I'm meaning Salt Lake. I'm meaning 2010 here. I'm not talking, you know, when they're playing over here.
You sound like you're backpedaling here.
I'm not backpedaling. I didn't clarify my question. I mean Olympic hockey with the best on best on a North American ice surface. Maybe that's what we can see more of, playoff hockey.
That's right. And so what players are picked for those games?
Yeah.
They picking hard-nosed guys?
No, that's the best on best.
They take most of these skill guys. Best on best, you pick your team for a best on best. It has no analogy whatsoever, not even the slightest bit, to our game and how we put our teams together. So going back to your question, I'm conceding it becomes more of a skating game. What I will offer to you is my opinion, and I don't really care if you agree or not, is that if you have two teams of equal ability, the bigger team's still going to win a playoff series. It was very obvious in the finals last year to me which team was bigger.
Brian Burke with us here on Sportsnet 650. Changing gears, Mike Fisher posted something on social media the other night, Brian, after the Nashville and San Jose game, where it's Arvidsson going into the corner, his stick's up high, and Vlasic basically embellishes getting hit on the head with a high stick that leads to a power play. The Sharks capitalize, and that's the difference in the game. It kind of brought up the idea, and Fisher suggested that, you know, officials maybe have an opportunity to have video review with some of these calls. Do you like the idea of maybe almost, you know, in the Canadian Football League, you can challenge pass interference. Do you like the idea of maybe having a challenge on maybe the odd call that, I mean, I think every general manager and coach has probably gone, that wasn't a call.
For sure. I mean, probably once a night. But one like that, that's an embellishment that costs you a game, that's really tough to take. Here's the issue with replay and why we came into it so slowly in pro sports in North America. The issue is that the best experience has to be for the fan that buys the ticket. So everything we do is driven toward making sure that they get the best experience. That's not true in other sports. I think in the NFL, you can argue the fan at home has a better experience. We don't want to drag it out with innumerable reviews. And that was why we fought review, all of us, baseball, football, everyone. We fought review for probably a decade saying, we can't do it quickly. We can't do it well. And our primary customer, the guy we worry about most is a guy with a woman who was sitting in a seat. So we came to it slowly. All the leagues have very carefully restricted its application and how long it can take. They've agreed it's not going to apply in a multiple types of situations where you could argue, okay, if we had that replay, Vlasic wouldn't have drawn the penalty. But we've said, no, we can't review everything, so here's what we're going to review. And so I don't know if a coach's challenge for other things makes sense. We are fortunate that we have the best officials in the world by a mile. They don't miss much, but they do miss the odd thing. And, you know, I would entertain a limited review on some of these other calls, but you're, again, the number one goal is always the fan who bought a ticket. We've got to make sure she has the best possible experience before we worry about getting every little call right and making it a four-hour game.
Yeah, and I guess, Brian, the thing would be as you refine it and it's gotten better and better every year, becomes quicker and quicker, maybe you then can add to it and go, hey, we've got the room now. We can add one more. We can now add a challenge.
Yeah, and then who looks at it? We always wanted the referees to look at it. So when this rule change came in for the disallowed goals and goaltender interference, we wanted the referees on the ice to make the call because they were on the ice. They felt the game. They were closest to it. Then we realized there was such a wide discrepancy that we said, no, we want Toronto to make the call. So who would make the call there, Toronto, whatever? So that's another issue. So I would be open to discussing anything that where we get more stuff right that we currently don't get right, as long as it does not produce a lengthy delay.
It's one game, but how excited or enthused should Canuck fans be when they are without four of their best six players? No Edler, no Tanev, no Besser, no Pedersen. And there seems to be this compete level with this team who have fallen behind by one goal in 8 of the 10 games, but never by two, and they still win. Is that the foundation that you need? You can always add skill. But is Travis Green finding a chemistry and a compete level that is really bright for the future here in Vancouver?
Yes, I think he's doing. I think if he took early votes for Coach of the Year, he'd probably be in the top three, if not the clear winner. There were three Canadian teams that were picked to struggle right out of the gate: Vancouver, Ottawa, Montreal. They've all had good starts, and they're all doing it the same way: high compete level, play fast, young players making a difference. And I was asked on the Calgary radio station, Sportsnet, this morning, can that last? I said, I don't think it can, because at some point teams adjust, and at some point skill takes over. And so for your power play, you do need skill. It's not enough to have hustle and enthusiasm and drive. You got to have high skill. So they've got that in Pedersen. They've got that in Besser. You know, they've got some skill, but teams with more skill and more depth probably take over later on in the season. But is it ever fun to watch? This team, I watched most of the game last night. They don't quit. They don't stop trying. They lose players. Like, guys drop like flies last night. Edler goes off, and then Gudbranson looks like he's going off. And they're playing with 4D or 3.5D, and they still find a way to do it. It was really exciting. So if I'm a Canucks season ticket holder, I'm pretty pleased. Can they keep this pace up? It's hard to say.
Brian, before we let you go, there was a story in the Washington Post and in Post Media out here on this side of the country talking about there is the old urban legend of the Roxy flu, and they're suggesting that there's the Roxy flu shot. We've talked on this. You joined us in the past few weeks, and you referenced a point how, you know, you've seen a lot of careers from young players that have been derailed from either alcohol or women. The Roxy kind of provides a lot, but it was suggesting that that, you know, players are staying away from a place that has obviously a lot of eyeballs and a lot of camera phones, smartphones, and all that. In your time here, were there Roxy flu stories? Did the Roxy help or hurt your teams out here on the West Coast?
It helped. It helped. You know, I had a lot of buddies in the police force there, and we got up to date reports on who was in the Roxy and how late they were there.
Really?
Yeah. So we kept. I had a problem with one player my first year there, where I came into work. You guys know I was in at work 6 o'clock in the morning, and my red light's on my phone. So I play the message to the Tigers. This is Constable Sokowski. You don't know me, but Sandy gave me your number. Well, Sandy was one of the top cops I knew, and boom, and your player walked out of the Ritz last night at 2:30 in the morning. So call a player in, and the players are paranoid. Now they're like, they're following us. Jesus, there's cameras everywhere. And I'm like, no, you're playing in Canada. A cop phoned it in. Wake up. People are watching you.
Hey,
the visiting teams were much, they found the Roxy a lot more than our guys did.
Real quickly, Gino Ojic's going to join us in an hour. What are your thoughts on Gino?
Gino?
Yeah.
I think you can make a case that he was certainly the toughest guy in the modern era. In the modern era, I think, you know, there's some of the older guys that that were terrifyingly tough, but I love Gino. He was great for us. I loved having him on my team.
Could he play now? Because he could skate.
Yeah, he could skate well. I don't know. It would be borderline. But he was a good skater, and he was pretty skilled for a guy as tough as he was, too. And great teammates. Teammates absolutely loved him. Pat loved him. I loved him. We loved having him.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Bricky.
Thanks, guys. Sportsnet 650.